beginning of time, our very humanity has been based on connecting at the cellular level. Today, connecting on a cellular level has taken on a different meaning.
I'm so happy to have three students of mine who, when the world turned upside down, a lot of students were already away on spring break. I know at Manhattanville we were away at spring break, and some people just had backpacks and none of their stuff. And spring of 2020 is going to go down in history. There we were in New York in the epicenter of a global pandemic, and nobody quite knowing what to do, but teaching an interpersonal communications class where for 8 years now we have been doing this evolution of a digital cleanse, which is the No App for Life Challenge. We learned a lot from the digital cleanse, as you saw in the movie Selling Your Soul. But what we learned after that was it wasn't so much about going without your devices. It was really what students can do and how empowered they are when they build the skills and then focus on going within. You know, how am I developing? We had an entire generation, of course, that we refer to them as the digitally socialized generation who did not ask to be having all their social life through a screen. And I think the irony was that I didn't know what to do, because here we are when the world is turning upside down and everyone's going, thank God for social media, thank God for tech, now we can stay connected. I literally was like, I'm not sure I'm going to make my students do this. I don't know. Again, I wanted to introduce you to our guest today, Erica Moran, who is a graduate of Manhattanville College and now a grad student at BU, Boston University. And Stephen Boating, you were in our class, had you two classes in a row. You came back for more. you're a sophomore at Iona. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
And you're communications major?
Yes, communication major, okay. Focusing in broadcasting.
There you go. And Tessa?
You're
back at Manhattanville next year.
Yep, I am, as a senior, a communications major as well.
Good. Congratulations on all that. So I'm just going to ask you, I did not know what to do. I literally, and I think I ran it by you, I was like, I'm not sure what to do here. Do you even remember when we were discussing it? I was like, do you want to do it? Do you not film me? I can't, my brain was like mush. We were discussing it and you guys were like, yeah, no, we're up. Yes.
Yeah, because that was coming, wasn't that coming like the end of mid of April? And at that point, we were at the beginning of March and we were like, eventually hit a point that we're like, yeah, it's a good time. We can do this now.
Yeah, so I remember being even more nervous than I was before, definitely to start it. Because I remember like everybody in the world like clung to social media as their means of communication. And Joni was there saying, do you guys like want to go a week? And I was very apprehensive, but I definitely wanted to see, because I knew I needed a change, because those weeks were so anxious, like not knowing what was actually happening. So I wanted like that to be my change for at least a week and mm-hmm. seeing if that helped anything.
Okay. Stephen, what were you thinking? Were you like, no, I'm gonna cheat?
Nah, I had it in my head the whole time. Like, I'm gonna get this done. As I told you before, like, I went on a retreat in high school in which they took our phones for a week. So I was already adapted to not having my phone and being off social media. So I was looking forward to it, actually. Mm-hmm.
How much of that had to do with the fact that we were working on skill building for so many weeks before that? Do you feel like that is the sort of the missing link these days when people are saying, you know, oh, you know, people are always on their phones? Is it because it's a lack of a skill that we need to get better at, and we're using our tech more as a crutch because we don't feel equipped to be able to do that?
I say yes, because I feel like I have friends who are terrified to make a phone call to make a doctor's appointment. And it's like nothing bad can come from that. They can either say, yes, we can take you that day, or no, can we reschedule? That's the worst that can happen. But yet people are absolutely terrified to talk to the sweet receptionist that's just on the other line.
Well, remember, I literally gave you homework assignments to make phone calls.
Oh, I called. Yeah.
How did that work for you guys? And again, you know, when I did Selling Your Soul and Taylor with the pink hair, you guys remember, right? And she's like, I will not answer the phone. I cannot make a phone call. Every time I played that, or if I was playing that in a high school and there were parents there, they were like, oh, what is, oh, they can't make a phone. And year after year, I was like, no, you're not understanding. Because you're not doing it, because we're not raising kids to pick up the phone and build that skill, they're losing it. So you might think that, oh, that's ridiculous that a kid can't answer, pick up the phone. But little, if you're not doing it, what is it about that is terrifying for people? Well, you all know.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't have as big of a fear, but I was definitely like anxious around answering a phone rather than a FaceTime or a text. So I understand the idea of, oh, their reaction to whatever I'm going to say is going to be immediate. And I, being on the phone, I can't just hang up. I can't just ignore it like you can a text. So like facing that anxiety of it, I definitely remember like doing the homework assignments, and after the phone call was done, I was like, oh, that there was nothing to be scared of. Why was I so nervous? Mm.
The thing is with that spontaneous, you know, being, people are so afraid of a second awkward silence, you know, and I don't know why, but it is a real feeling, right? So you can say, no, I really had that feeling. Stephen, how'd you do with your phone calls, with the phone call assignment?
Well, let me say this before I talk about the phone calls. I was really like oblivious to the fact that people didn't like, weren't comfortable with getting on the phone. Like even when we watched Selling Your Soul and I was seeing Taylor and stuff, I was like, this is probably 1 out of 100. And then like real life examples and real life storytelling happened in our class where people explained their fear of phone calls. So that really awakened me to the not having the knowledge of that phone calls and talking spontaneously is a challenge for a lot of us in our day and age. So with my phone calls, they really were spontaneous as the homework assignment. Mm. So during the homework assignment, I really like tried to focus on the points that you gave us, which would allow us to, you know, be better at talking over the phone, which was like active listening and recite, paraphrasing whatever the person you're talking to is saying. And while doing those things, I realized that your conversation becomes better when you do those things.
Yeah, and I think it's just so many times people just take it for granted. They just think people know how to do this interpersonal communication thing in a decade where we changed all of the social norms and we never sat down to say, oh, we have some new rules, we have some new experiences, and we have a group of young people that actually need to be taught some of these things that just they got lost. They dropped out during this past decade of the way we change things. I want to go back to what Stephen was just saying. So let's talk about the class itself. And Stephen, you were saying you started to hear from other people. We sit in a circle. It's always about 20 women, 20 young ladies, to about 5 guys. And we sit down and we literally start to talk about communicating in the digital age. And
I don't know where this is going.
We all know where this is going. Everything from texting to romance to intimacy, it just seems to be a lot harder for your generation. And Erica and Tessa, maybe you'd like to describe your first introduction to Stephen in that class. You want to tell that story? You and Erica, because I had you both here and Stephen, and I'm like, all right, we're putting the three of you guys back together because there was a response to this. So we sit down in this class and we're just talking. I was just going to say shooting the shit, you know, about life, well, this is a podcast, so I think I'm allowed to say that. Life in the digital age and how hard it is for you guys. And what were some of the things that you started to hear that people were saying, oh, yeah, I have a tough time with a phone call. And you're like, oh, okay, it's not one in 100. What were some of the other things that you guys were hearing? And go ahead, talk about how you met Stephen.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't really remember the details of the conversation, but we were talking about the digital age and, like, how the different sexes, like in a like a romantic relationship, how they interact differently, and how, and the girls in the class were sharing their perspectives of how a guy would react to situation. And I think Stephen then stepped in, and I believe he referred to the women in the classroom as "you guys are crazy" was one of his quotes. And that was me and Erica's first introduction to Stephen.
Yeah, Stephen was literally took the grenade, pulled the pin, threw it in the middle of the room. You guys are crazy. And the faces from all the women in the room. Stephen, what was your response to that? Because I stood back. I was like, I don't know. Why are you guys responding such a way?
After that, that's something guys should never, ever say. Do not refer to women, a group of women, as "you guys." Don't do it.
No. Can I chime in real quick? My issue, because I was saying, the issue wasn't the fact that you referred to us as guys, not that being like the title. It was the fact that you're making a generalization of people saying like, oh, you guys are all crazy, because that was including everyone in that classroom and then beyond. And I sat here and I was like, listen, I know who I am, and I'm definitely not crazy. I'm not clingy. I know that for a fact. I like to empathize, get different perspectives, kind of go back, totally overanalyze, but I'm like, totally not, maybe that is crazy, but not your definition of crazy. So I was like, oh, he's got to change that language real quick. Otherwise he's going to get jumped by 85% of this class right now.
I think Erica almost like came out of her seat when she heard that, but I was literally standing back, just trying so hard to just mediate the class. I'm like, oh, and what was your response? Never, ever. And that is some of the things that we do deal with today in regard to generalizations. The word, Stephen, is like misogynistic. That's why women go crazy when you throw those. Oh, I shouldn't have said crazy. We get upset. We get a little frustrated. What are some of the things that we learned before we had to all go break and go into quarantine? What were some of the things and the discussions that you guys are not hearing enough of from one another?
Differently, completely.
Say that again, Erica.
I was just saying how men and women communicate differently, completely.
Yeah.
Complete different ways of communication and needs.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has ultimately has the desire to be loved, right? Mm-hmm. That's like 101 interpersonal Joni right there. So
is it was it weird, because I do talk very warm and fuzzy, and I'm like, if you're a human, you just want to be loved. The end. How is that when you heard that as students? Because usually we're hearing the academic stuff, but did that resonate?
Totally.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You think we need to speak about that in those terms a little bit more as just part of our conversations every day?
Yeah, because I feel like social media has almost made us more jaded as like a generation, just because you present your best facade, and that facade is I'm confident, nothing can break me. I'm independent. I can do this, that, and the third. When in reality, the same basic need is we all want and need to be loved. And I feel like social media has kind of jaded us and guarded us from that necessity.
Mm. Tessa?
Good.
Yeah, Erica put it best in her words. I definitely think that hearing that was like a reminder, like, oh, like the person that I put online is part of me. It's an element of me, but it's not all of me. And so I need to kind of go back into like my basic needs. Like everybody needs to be loved. Like, so do I. I still have that same basic need. And like, I kind of need to step back from myself online and kind of look at like who I am in my real life and who I am to like the people around me.
So do you feel that social media and the first digitally socialized generation has been impacted by a dehumanizing element?
I would say so. Because
do you feel that it's like, oh, you know, somebody on social media is not really a person with real feelings, that you're not really, we can't feel that level of empathy. It's just one more little scroll. It's just a flash by your face on a screen. Does that tend to make us feel like we're all a little dehumanized?
Yeah, I think it makes it a lot easier for us to judge people, because you're not faced with like immediate consequences and you're not faced with actually getting to know the person, because you really don't know the person on the other side of that profile. It's all, like Erica said, it's all the best version of people. So it's definitely a lot easier to judge them when you're just looking at a screen and like, oh, you can forget about it in 5 minutes after making that like slight judgment.
And even posting a slight judgment, even saying it, and putting it out there?
Yeah. Like, it happens with, like, cyberbullying. Like, we talked about this in class. It's easier to make a judgment and say that judgment when you're not faced with the consequences immediately and you're not faced with seeing how it affects people. So, in a way, it dehumanizes the other person because you're not able to empathize with that person.
Okay. How do you think it shapes us, the person that's behaving in this same judgmental way personally? Like, we all know that we do it too, right? So sometimes we have this weird thing. It's like, oh, there are these cyber bullies. Like, they're bred somewhere in some remote place, and then they just show up on the interweb. But every single one of us has probably had that moment where we've felt that way. We might have even said something that we're not proud of, that somebody else might go, oh my God, you know, that was mean. And you're like, was it? And you know, it all happens so fast. So how do you think that shapes us personally when we're all nice people, but something happens to us that sometimes triggers a dark side that appears? I'll let you think about that.
That was loaded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least it's not 9:20 in the morning just throwing that at us.
You know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, if in the entire span of your life you said something not very nice online, even if you're like, I'm just kidding, like, what is that? How does that shape us when we're the ones doing it?
I think part of that comes from like our own insecurities, because we all have them. Like, you can't hide the fact. And again, like, when you're on social media, you're putting your best foot forward, your best facade. So you kind of hit a breaking point, because when you just keep seeing the best of everyone and like people are reaching these goals and like they got this promotion, oh, they have this relationship and stuff like that, you eventually, it starts to wear away at you and you just start to feel bad about yourself and you forget that this is just everyone's best picture, even though they could also be going through a really shitty time right now, but this is what they want to show. So eventually you hit a breaking point, and that breaking point is a comment that you now want to take back. And now it comes across as like, you're being an asshole, you're the cyber bully. And so it just kind of inherently goes back to like your own insecurities, but also that horrible cycle of it's social media, it's your best face, your best foot forward, and we're all doing it.
I feel like that's where the No App for Life challenge comes in a lot for I don't know about you guys, but for all of us, I think that because we went through that period and we realized how beneficial taking time away off social media and really like listening to your thoughts and listening to people around you, how beneficial that can be. I feel like when we get, because it happens, it's going to happen. Like social media, being on social media, it's pretty, it's a psychological thing. So it's a matter of when is it going to happen when I feel like I'm comparing myself to somebody else, or I feel like I have to put on this persona that is really not me. So when that happens, I feel like because we went through the No App for Life challenge, it's easier for us to tap into the lessons we learned from that. Whereas the people who haven't gone through No App for Life or learned the skills that we learned have a tough time trying to tap into that.
Mm. So before this, because I've been doing it for so long, literally I'm now thinking like hundreds of students have done this over the years. And it starts out like this very bizarre, you know, I was looking at Justin. Remember Justin? Right?
Yeah.
Right? And he, I don't remember when he was doing his presentation, and he's like, I'm not going to lie, I was not going to do it. I was like, like, again, and it's so consistent exactly with, like, Ben in the film, you know, who's like, you're a stupid teacher, and you do not know what you're talking about. But something, you're hearing something, you guys are hearing something that's making you want to explore yourselves, because we refer to this as inherent motivation. As you're saying, we had 25 students at Manhattanville College during a pandemic when everyone was going like, thank God for social media. And you still all were up for doing this, but were you hesitant at a time, or were you still like, I do want to find out about myself? What happens inside of you? And what are you hearing that literally makes you want to do this?
I think for me, it was what I was missing around me. So like after going through half of the class in person, and we talked about empathetic listening and like reflecting on your own thoughts, rather than, I feel like when I'm on social media, I'm not connecting with myself at all, and I'm not even connecting with other people, but focusing on their personas online. So I really wanted to reconnect back with the life that I was missing around me when I was on my phone.
So did you know you were missing it, or you did not really? Where were you in your consciousness on what you were missing?
I knew that I was missing something, because of the amount of time that I was spending on my phone before we did this. And especially going through the class and hearing everybody else's experiences with social media, I started to really become in tune that like, oh, I'm definitely missing something. I don't know what it is, but I want to find out through this challenge.
How important was the group dynamic? I mean, it literally is kind of like group therapy. You know, that's how it's modeled. And the reason why group therapy works is because when you hear somebody else is having some experience that you relate to, when they verbalize it, when they put it out there, when they're brave enough to literally say, well, this is how I feel. And then all of a sudden you're sitting there going like, oh, you're allowed to say that? Oh, we're allowed to say that. It doesn't make me feel so great, because I was thinking, I'm so cool. Look at how I am such a hardened personality type that I can deal with social media, right? But when all of a sudden you're hearing people saying, it doesn't make me feel good, does it give you permission? Because I think, Erica, you might have been one of the early people that were literally saying,
I don't like the way it feels. But it was, as a performer, you're also being told this is how you have to brand yourself. You got to get out there, right?
Well, yeah, because I remember when I took my professional World of Musical Theater class, it was great to get that because, like, the world is changing and it is on social media. And, like, that's how people are finding people and making connections and networking. But one of the biggest takeaways from it was they were like, your Instagram has to reflect who you want to become as a performer. And, like, your first 9 photos should really represent who you are. So, like, the first 9 when you first go to your profile. So it's not even like the first 9 I've ever posted, just the first 9 when you first view my profile. And I sat there looking at my profile for 15 minutes at these 9 photos to be like, does this represent the performer I want to be? Mind you, having received my BFA and graduated, I have no idea what performer I want to be because it changes on the daily. Some days I want to be a J-Lo backup dancer. Other days I want to be on Outer Banks season 2. And then I want to be on the Hamilton National Tour, all of which cannot be done at the same time. But that's will be a discussion for a later date. But it's just one of those things that's exhausting that, like, I have to put out this persona or, like, direct choreographers, people like that to see, but also, like, what I want to, like, represent me. But also in the same breath, I've came to the conclusion throughout this process that no one cares what you put on social media because they're not holding their breath for you to post there. If I don't post in 5 days, no one's going to be like, oh my God, she died. Like, that's not their thought process. They're just like, oh, like, she's just not, like, they don't even think about it. They'll eventually scroll and then be like, oh, I'll double tap. That's it. That's the thought process. They're like, does this catch my eye? Yeah. Give it a double tap. That's it.
I want to go through exactly your experience again, you know, on the No App for Life. But I do want to ask you, do you feel that the world is not understanding this challenge of I have to brand myself, I have to get myself out there, but having to be on social media all the time doesn't make me feel good. I know it's like the world is telling me I have to do this and I have to have be represented to get a job. I have to know social media because those are the only jobs that you can get is social media marketing, and you're 22, so you'll do our social media. Do you feel that this conversation is not getting out there enough, or we're not discussing it in a way of allowing people to have permission to have social media as a choice? I mean, I'm not even sure we're having this discussion. Can social media be a choice? Can you opt out? And still you're shaking your head, no, you can't.
Because I think it was Daniel who brought it up in class. He was like, I'm looking at jobs to apply for, and it says to, like, to be even considered, like, for the job, you have to have, like, 3,000, like, Instagram followers. I might be hyperbolic in that number, but it was, like, a very high number in the sense that you had to be on social media and you had to have these number of followers for us to consider you for this job. And I sat there and I was like, this is the first I'm ever hearing of such a thing. But in the same breath, there are probably people in this class thinking, this is the first I'm ever hearing that your social media profile, which is usually for your friends, also has to represent who you are for your job and what you want to do in your life. And so it's one of those things, like, yeah, we're not discussing it enough because I don't want to sit on Instagram all day, every day. Because part of it is too, like, it makes you feel like shit when you see all these performers that you're following sometimes, or all these other aspiring performers. And some of them are booking agents. Some of them are getting these jobs. And then you sit here and I'm like, I finished New Girl for the third time today. Like, I'm like, what am I doing with my life? And then you're like, am I talented? And you go down that downward spiral of, I'm not good enough. When in reality, you may be pretty okay in life. It's just not part of your journey right now. But it's just not a topic of conversation that people want to have, in a sense, because no one almost wants to restart life because it's become such a big part of life that if you acknowledge, like, social media is bad, we don't like it, or, like, it makes me feel unhappy, you almost feel like you have to redo everything almost. And that's also stressful because then you're like, this is how the world communicates.
You guys, so I get, yeah. You know, I mean, that is my question. Can social media be a choice? Should we get it to a place where it should be a choice? Because we're now finally seeing
the results of 10 years of a digitally socialized population. We now know the stats are crazy for a new form of connectivity, the connection industry. We are now, and you in particular, your generation, the loneliest generation in history.
Thank you.
I've been on your side, Stephen, but you know, I'm going 14 years ago, I'm like, I am just going to question this. I know everybody keeps saying this is the greatest thing, but my students just seem miserable. I thought I was crazy. I'm like, I think the reason I got into this was I kept going, but they're not happy. I don't see people. They're not happy. And everyone's like, this is great. Social media, the world can see you and look at how many. And I'm like, not sure. A decade later. So you right now, we have a loneliness epidemic.
Can you refresh our minds and audience minds of like how Facebook started again? I know you said it started at like Harvard. Didn't it start with a whole bunch of college students and it didn't go well, but like they still launched it? Like there was
okay. So I'll give you just the. I think people. I'm always surprised when you guys don't know it. So you know when we were transitioning over to the digital realm and you have technologies and it's like, look, this thing is so cool, right? So. For years and years, and I grew up in show business, in the entertainment industry, right? So we always had these books. And if you were looking for a producer, if you were looking for directors, you would have the Warner Brother book, and you would get it, and you would have these, you would have your contacts, right? So Harvard had their book of all their students, so you can connect. You can have this actual book thing. And then... the first thing, it was the Facebook, so you can see students' faces and who they were and how to a contact book, you know? And then when it went digitally, I think that is sort of when it started to mess with your head, right? So there's something about a digital platform or a digital stage where all of a sudden you have this power, right? And everyone can see you, and then everyone can hear you, and I have a thought, and I'm going to say my thought. And originally it was guys, you know, going like, let's check out the girls, right? Let's check them out. And then rating. Let's rate the girls. Let's say literally it was basically like, who would you do? Not to be crude, but it was, that's kind of what it was. And it, you know, again, it took off from there. When the money keeps rolling in, we don't ask why. Sorry to steal from musical theater and Evita, but when the money keeps rolling in, this is how powerful. And so it's the power of, oh my God, we can connect the world. And that's, again, they say power corrupts, right? So, we had Facebook in 2006 because we had to have a .edu. And I think I was telling you guys in my class, we have young people with this really powerful tool to be able to say things, to be able to be seen, to be able to get in touch with people, and no help as to how to navigate. Stephen, you just said a few minutes ago, it's psychological, right? So you have this psychological impact, you know, messing with your head and how you can be seen. And again, when we keep communicating in a way to be loved, to be seen, to be heard, we all need to be heard and understood. Now you intersect that with a tool of mass communication. How could it not go wrong? You know? And at the time, I'm like, my classes were struggling. Students were like, this is just not, you know, people, emotion outweighs logic. Remember that rule, right? So you get pissed, you're angry, and now you have this tool in front of you, and you weaponize it, right? And my first introduction to this might not be a really good thing was I had two students, two girls, who were following the digital drama to discover that their girlfriend, whose boyfriend broke up with her because he was gay, and she was so mad, she outed him on Facebook before anyone in his family knew. And and as the teacher in the front of the class, when they were like, oh, she just, I was almost in tears. I was like, wait, what? She's telling everybody? He told that to her in private, and now she's out there, and I literally was almost shaky. I just was so heartbroken for this poor kid. I was very scared. So that was my introduction, Stephen. And then from there, I'm like, I don't know, people. I just don't know if this is healthy. And everyone kept saying, you're ridiculous. It's great. I love Facebook. I'm like, oh, okay. Did that answer your...
Yeah, it did.
So you're the one that said a few minutes ago, though, it's psychological. So let me ask you guys, being the first digitally socialized generation, how do you think being socialized on a digital realm, how is it affecting you personally, your relationships, and your world, the society? How have you been impacted by digital socialization? And it's not 9:20 in the morning, so you guys should be able to.
I think it's funny because growing up, I would always be like, no, like to my parents, like talking about it with them. Like they were never, I think you mentioned this, you briefly said something about how like young people started on social media without any guidance, like nobody else to tell us like how to do things. So we had to figure it out for ourselves. So with that, like growing up, my parents never told me, oh, don't do this, but do this. And like when they would say, don't spend so much time on your phone, like, why are you just watching TV? Why are you just on your phone? Like, what's Instagram and what's all this? They were never there to help me. So I never really listened to them. But growing up in it and being so immersed in it as like a 13-year-old who's just figuring out what the world is and like how to even communicate as a teenager and definitely not listening to what my parents were telling me. It was now looking back, I was like, wow, I just was so lost on figuring this all out and it was just a waste. I felt like looking back on it because why was I so obsessed with how many likes I was getting on Instagram as compared to everybody else and like all my other friends. So it was definitely hard as like my parents were not understanding it either.
Right, right. And that was the thing. That was the first time that a generation was in the situation where you couldn't turn to your parents and say, yeah, how did you go through this, Mom? And they're like, I don't know. I got nothing. I have no. And that was, you know, because, gee, middle school is the easiest time in every person's life, right? And I think that was why I was so compassionate about the situation, because, again, I also had a child at that same age. And as the parent, I'm like, I am not sure what to do here, but my students were filling me in. You know, I was getting the stories like, oh, it's so great. The texting is great because when you're bombed and like you're passed out drunk, like I just have my girlfriend text my mom, you know, that I'm sleeping over and I'm like, wait, what? What? So of course I'm like, I come home to my child. I'm like, you will never have this texting thing. Never. Right. So, Erica, how about you? Was Tessa's experience similar to yours? Pretty classic or no?
I think when I'm like reminiscing about my time, I almost had a different experience because I'm the oldest of four and I can already tell you we've had different experiences. Because I didn't get like my first iPhone until I was like a sophomore in high school and they got theirs when they were in like seventh grade. And so like I had an iPod Touch and so you could still have social media, but I wasn't as attached to it in a sense, just because like you need to have Wi-Fi and this, that, and the third, whereas an iPhone you could connect anywhere. And so I didn't get Facebook until I was a sophomore in high school because I needed like rehearsal schedules because my mom didn't want me to get like Facebook at that point, because like Branchy public schools would always have those assemblies of like the dangers of online and the information you put out there. So obviously like they had that in a sense to almost like corral us. But like I didn't get fully invested into social media until later on, like in high school in a sense, just because that's just how I ended up doing it, because I didn't get like a phone to connect me universally until I was like halfway through. So like my mom, like,
so you had years of being able to develop in a different way.
Yeah, because I find that my parents are traditional in the way they raised us, similar I find to how like you raised Morgan. They like they wanted us to talk things out and communicate like as they grew up and stuff like that. But of course there were always times that like my brother was more attached to his phone than like I ever was. And then like my sisters are now like more in tune to social media and how they look. And so like they would make comments like, you're so attached to your phone. But my mom eventually kind of caught on, was more concerned with it, because she thought, oh, this is more of an addiction rather than like he can't put it down for 1 second to have a conversation. She was like, oh, like maybe it's not just like he can just do it. Like he may actually, there was a point that she was concerned about that. So like,
well, because as parents, you start to watch the behavior of a person and your developing child, and you're watching these behaviors, and it's this sort of weird argument you're having in your head, because the rest of the world is saying, it's fine, look at, you know, and you're seeing the commercials, and, you know, oh, this, you know, Justin Bieber kid on the YouTube, he just got a record deal, hey, you know, it's like the internet lottery, and then people are like, yeah, oh, you can make money from this. Stephen, yeah, were you feeling... And how close did you get with social media on your phone at those, in your teenage years?
I was pretty big on Facebook at a young age in middle school. That's when I started, probably even sixth grade, middle school. Everybody was on it. It was like a teenage drama. It was like Degrassi on in an app.
The Degrassi app, Facebook, yeah. but again, you know, I'm a different generation. It's the drama that we had. If you were embarrassed in my day, you know, and there were four people around, those four people might have told another four people. Even, and you're like, oh, okay, so I have a group of people that are now talking about me and saying what an idiot I was. Okay. That's not a million. You know, that is like, okay, and I can get to all of them, or I can talk to those four and say, that was really mean, or we need to talk this out, or we're not talking these days, and you can resolve it. I think that's the big difference when you're doing the digital drama. And Degrassi, what was the name of that show? Degrassi what? What's the rest of the TV show? Degrassi, whatever.
I think it was just Degrassi.
Yeah. There's no way of wrangling all of that in and then solving it. So it just goes out there, and the pain, the humility just lingers, right? Until maybe somebody else is now the topic of the drama. Oh, good. They're on Steven. They're playing that thing of Steven over and over. And look, oh, the focus is not on me anymore. Is that the difference? And did you feel like there was this big difference between the audience size?
Yeah, definitely. Because a lot of times, it would be, like you said, the focus would be on one specific person, and then that would, you know, drag on for like however amount of days until the fire went out, and then once something pops up again, it's then another person, and then another person, and then another person, and then another person, and then that really, well. Not for me, but because I didn't have that much of trouble staying away from social media. But for a lot of my friends, I can tell that it startled their like self-esteem, so to speak. So I think that was one of the biggest things that happened in the early developmental stages of our childhood.
Yeah, definitely self-esteem. Do you feel that growing up digitally socialized through social media has had a way of hardening you guys emotionally?
I think in a way that, yes, it has in the way I would present myself, but like it definitely impacts me the same exact way, but I just am hesitant to show it. And I feel that that's how a lot of people are, because like, yes, we're forced to deal with things like we were talking about online, like on Facebook, like with drama and stuff. We were forced to deal with things like, oh, like this doesn't bother me. Like I have to pretend that none of these comments or what these people are saying about me or somebody else isn't bothering me. But in reality, I felt like, at least for me, it was still affecting me personally the same way, but I was forced not to admit it.
Mm. Yeah. So one of the things that gets me very defensive of your population is when they're saying, you know, keep saying old people, but, you know, they're not resilient. They're not resilient. Mm. I'm like, do you understand what this population has been subjected to? You know, and I'm so upset at that. You know, we have a mental health crisis now that has been directly linked to the level of anxiety and depression and sadness and loneliness. There's something, the process of being socialized through a digital realm, I think one of the other questions is, we've talked about in classes, is intimacy building, right? And so is there something about being part of the digitally socialized generation where you might not dare be open and trusting and honest with people because the threat of some of that information about you that might come back to bite you might be so detrimental that you, somewhere in your subconscious, you're thinking, I would not dare tell somebody that something so personal.
She does it again.
I'll let you think. I can always edit. I can always take the dead air. So if you, it's, what, why? What was that question? Why did it hit you that way?
I feel like I'm the poster child for that. That's
do you?
Why.
Why?
I just, because I find that I like to carry myself as like, I'm a badass bitch. No one can touch me. Like I have a bullshit filter, but thank God this is a podcast. But when in reality, I do want to be vulnerable, be have those and like be intimate with someone. But in reality, like I don't want that to come back and bite me in the ass and have them use it against me. So it's like that whole idea of like, oh, like it's a trust issue kind of ordeal.
Right, right.
And like, it's been psychologically damaging in a sense that like, you don't want to go back out there because you also see all these posts of people calling women crazy for thinking this, but it's like, oh, but it's actually like, it's just a necessity for that person or like that individual. So yeah, it's hard because I'm the poster child for that question and answer.
Were you conscious of that before me just tossing that out there at you? Is there something that you might be thinking that's the truth? I don't disclose.
That's something I think I've been trying to discover over the past like year or so, just because the last boyfriend I had was like senior year of high school. We all know and love him. But, and so throughout college, I was trying to figure out like, cause there were prospects, stuff like that. And I kept trying to think like, what am I doing wrong? Is it me personally? And it's not necessarily that I am a bitch by any standard or crazy, but I also have to think like, am I opening up? And so like, eventually it devolves to me just going through this thought process of like, oh, like I do need to work on myself in a sense. And I do need to grow as a human being and figure these things out. And luckily I have had the pleasure throughout this 5 month quarantine to kind of figure things out and kind of get on board and like open my heart in a sense.
Mm. All right, Tessa, she bought you time.
Not enough.
She just bought you time to think.
I think definitely there's always that question of like, oh, if I open up to this person in the future, if we have a falling out or we just separate for no reason at all as people drift apart, like, will they use their platform to, in a sense, like either like revenge or getting back at me? So it's definitely, or even like just crying in front of somebody. Mm. Like I am a very emotional person, as Erica knows. But I hate crying in front of people because it makes you so vulnerable. And like, they know your insecurities now. They know what makes you upset and what just like hits you in the right spot. So definitely it makes you, the world of social media makes at least me think twice at who I'm opening up to. Mm. And like, for what like emotion am I opening up to them?
I'll let you sit with that for a while. Yeah. You're that, we'll have to check in next week. Steven, yeah. I know it's a heavy question, but I know how deep you are. So they don't know you as well as I do. Do you feel like subconsciously you've been holding back and not?
No, I wouldn't say that I've been holding. That's one of the things that like that's like one of my like rules, but I live by not holding stuff in, because
I think we've seen that.
Yeah, because because for me, like, I've had experiences where I held stuff in and it didn't feel good to hold it in. So, and that was like, probably realized that at like the age of 7, right? So, and also had, that was, I probably realized that because of my brother. Like, he told me like, yo, it's not good to, you know, hold in your emotions, especially mm-hmm. like as a man, like that's, men are holding your emotions, tough guy. Oh, okay. So I knew at a young age that holding in your emotions is not a good thing to do. So I wouldn't say that.
So you don't feel like for you that was a thing?
No.
And you didn't have it. Go ahead.
Sorry. I would say that I have a pretty good knowledge of getting to like know somebody or read somebody. So that gauges where and how much like I tell you. So that's where I think that I won't be as hurt. You know, if I know that I can trust you and I know that I can tell you certain things, and later, let's say later on, we have a fallout, I know that you're not the person that's going to like use that against me later on. So
you're going to go with your level of emotional intelligence. You're going to be able to know. Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's take a quick little break here. And then when we come back, we had 25 students at Manhattanville literally put social media on the back burner, literally take a week to not text. You had to make phone calls. And it was, again, a social science experiment in another social science experiment for a generation that
You know, that was in the middle of changing once again how we were connecting with one another. So we'll take a quick break and we'll be back.